Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey guys, welcome back to Soul Sisters. I hope that you all survived your Halloween parties. I have to say, I don't remember Halloween ever being as insane as it was in New York this past week. It was like New Year's Eve on steroids. Everybody was in costume. I'm talking children, I'm talking adults, I'm talking my brunch servers. Days before Halloween itself, everyone was just fully in costume, like it was sewed to their skin, and that was just how they look now. I don't know what's going on. Maybe we just really need to party as a country, and so we're just going to seize every holiday that arises. And you know, I'm okay with that. If that's what's going on, I'm totally down. Anyway, so let's talk about something that's very not American, which is our guest on the podcast today, Carla Bruni, who I was so nervous and excited to meet because I've been obsessed with her music for over a decade now. And she also was the First Lady of France, married to Nicolas Sarkozy. And she was a model for years and has just been this iconic figure in many spheres of culture and politics for a long time. And I was immediately glad to find out that she's also just a lovely person, and we had a great chat with her. So she has a beautiful new album out called French Touch. She covers awesome songs, like some of my favorite songs by The Stones and Patsy Cline. Willie Nelson even sings a song with her on this album. So it's pretty badass, and so is she. And I will just let you guys hear her now, Carla Bruni on Soul Sisters.
The people I love, I wait until they go to sleep.
Uh-huh.
You know, otherwise they, you know, like my children, they don't know I'm a songwriter. They think I'm their mom.
Yeah.
So they walk in, hey, you've got to put the cereals. And all. A man would never have that, right?
No,
a man
of
who is
not.
Writing songs, he has.
Yeah, you say,
know,
leave daddy alone, he's working.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And me, they come and ask, how do we do with the chicken?
Right.
Okay. Where's my t-shirt, you know?
So when do you sleep?
I, you know,
never,
not much. I yeah. sometimes nap.
Okay.
That's good.
Hey, that's a powerful skill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Napping,
is that when the writing?
Lovely napping.
Yeah. Yeah.
So nice with wine.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, I don't do it with wine. Otherwise I'd be dead. But in the summer you can do that. A little
yeah,
wine.
Yeah, exactly. A little white wine.
And then a little nap and then swim.
Yeah.
To wake up, you know, again.
That's a nice life. Yeah.
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 Well, 1 week in the summer.
Yeah. There you go. Guys.
Yeah.
I just want to announce what's happening right now. Carla Bruni's on Soul Sisters. I want to clap for it because I'm so excited that this is happening.
I'm clapping too. Yeah. I'm clapping myself. No, I'm clapping you girls.
This is fantastic. Carla Bruni. I have been such a fan of yours for a very long time.
Thank you so much.
And I
you
want
must
to tell
have been
you,
a kid then. Hey?
No, when I studied abroad in college, it was the year after your first album came out.
Mm-hmm.
And I was studying in Rome, and I had really good friends in Milan and Paris.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember we were all sharing your first album. Someone burned a copy of it. I don't remember what we were trying to figure out this morning, actually. I told them you were coming on. We couldn't remember which was the first friend. But it was either my friend Kristen or my friend Erica. And we all shared your CD and we listened to it the whole time we were living in Europe. And then we brought it back to college in Ohio.
Fantastic. God bless you.
And then we like listened to it all throughout the rest of our college years. And it, because it took us back to that happy place
of
studying
course.
Abroad. You know, it was the first time any of us had lived in Europe. And It was just like the best time of our life. So I associate you with that.
So I'm so glad. I'm so glad. See, because songs are like perfumes, you know, they bring you back right away.
Sense memory, yeah.
The fastest thing is probably perfume. And right after perfume, there is music, I guess.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, it goes right into that place in the brain, brings you to that place, bring you to the same atmosphere. And it's, sometimes it's you know, it's melancholic to feel like that.
Yeah. Right.
It's nostalgic and sort of very, I mean, it's troubling, you know, to go back in the past.
Yeah, it can be good or bad.
It's I think past is good because you're not there. Like, let's say you are heartbroken in the past.
Yeah.
And, you know, when time has passed by, you feel good about being heartbroken, right? Well, at the moment, it was just misery.
Right.
And sorrow and tears and depression.
Yeah.
And, you know, 20 years after, you're like, oh, it's so nice. I was heartbroken. Right. How nice.
Yeah, isn't that so cute?
Especially if it leads to anything creative.
Exactly. And especially if your life went on and you didn't got stuck on something, you know, because some sorrows are too hard to recover from. Well, you know, heartbroken usually when you're young.
Right.
You know, you recover from it
right.
and go to another love and find maybe someone better.
Exactly. Yeah.
So
speaking from experience.
Yeah.
A little bit. Yeah.
A lot.
Yeah.
Well, that's the only good thing about age, huh? Experience.
Yeah, there you go. Mm-hmm.
Will you pronounce that first album?
Quelqu'un m'a dit. It's a very funny title because it's a sentence that one says a lot in France, you know. And, you know, they say it, quelqu'un m'a dit, someone told me, you know, people say it without even thinking about it. And, you know, someone told me that the weather was nice, you know, in New York. And then, so, you know what, the nice part about that title is that you don't know who is someone. You don't know exactly when they told you.
Uh-huh.
But the point is someone gave you good information, right? Uh-huh. So that song says, someone told me that you still love me. And then you go on in the song and you realize that this girl doesn't know who told her, doesn't remember exactly when. And you start having doubts about her being in a real love story or just imagining something, right?
Yeah.
And so that's the good part of that song, is a song of a dreamer more than a song of a lover, you know?
Uh-huh.
Because it's a song that says, that is not so precise about being in love and that this person is still in love with the person. Yeah, but who, where? There's no indication.
Yeah.
It's not for sure, you know?
Right.
So you end up listening to the song and wondering, oh, maybe no one told her.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe there was no one that loved her. And maybe she's all, you know, building that up in her fantasy, in her mind.
Well, that happens a lot. People say, well, someone once told me. And then if you say, who told you that? I don't think that's true.
Well, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. Like, someone once told me that when your eyelashes fall out, they never grow back. And I believe that for about 20 years of my life.
Are you kidding?
And then finally someone challenged me. And I was like, yeah, I guess that doesn't make sense. Yeah, I don't know where I heard that. Yeah, that's probably not true.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. I love that.
Yeah.
You know, words.
Right. Yeah, they're funny things.
So where were you in your life when these words came to you?
I remember I was in somewhere in the, by the North Sea in France called La Boule, and I wrote the lyrics, Quelqu'un m'a dit, and then I was searching for some music, right? And I searched for a long time, and I remember very well because I had a terrible flu, so I was sneezing and coughing and having fever, and that's not a bad condition for writing, you know, because first of all, you're stuck at home. And then you don't feel so good, you know, so you feel a little bit dizzy and a little bit. And then fever is not bad for lyrics, and it's not bad for music too. And it's just like a little alcohol, but
Loosens things up a little
bit. Loosen things up.
No,
you know,
I've often said I like having like a cold sometimes because it makes you be really in touch with yourself.
I agree.
Like you're not focused on anything else. Just what your body is feeling.
And you
spend
need
a lot
recover.
Of hours by yourself focusing on yourself.
Exactly.
So you can get work done that way?
No, but maybe creative,
sort of creative.
Work.
That's what I mean. That's what I mean.
Well, creative. I got creative that day in the middle of the afternoon.
I've never been as
creative
as Carla Bruni being sick. That's my new sick goals, is Carla Bruni.
Maybe I get a terrible flu and write nothing the next time, you know? So it was probably depending on something else. But I remember writing that song, you know, sitting on, you know, in this hotel room by the North Sea, in front of the Atlantic, you know, and everything was gray and everything was rainy and by the beach, you know, rainy beach is not the funniest, you know, thing in the world.
Yeah.
But that's how the song came.
Oh, So you had quit modeling at that time.
Yeah.
To devote yourself to music?
Yeah. I mean, also modeling quit me.
Did it?
Yeah.
Meaning?
It quit everybody.
Jobs were starting to dry up a little bit? Or what?
No. I mean, it used to be like to have holiday, like to have like 2 weeks of holiday in August, you would have to, you know, put the dates down 1 year before. And then it started slowing down.
Yeah.
You know, I was 30. And it's normal because modeling is not really about your appearance, but it's more like being new.
Okay.
So, you know, they need new faces. We were there for like 10, 15 years.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, they knew our faces by heart and our bodies by heart.
Yeah.
And we've been doing all sorts of advertisement and fashion shows and editorial, you know. So it was a mix of... so we were sort of, we were not old, but we were used a little bit, you know.
Yeah, a little too familiar.
Yeah, a little too familiar. And they need, you know, people in fashion, the modeling is not the creative part of fashion. You know, it's like being, you know, like being the cherry on a cake, you know, but you're not really baking the cake.
Right,
you know?
Right.
It's more like the photographer, the designer, the hair, the makeup, the stylist, you know. So those are the creative people of fashion. And modeling is like, the models, we come at the end and we, and you know, and we appear and we bring something, you know, but we don't do the real. So the creative people, they need to change their support sometimes, you know, to get inspired also. And also fashion is always evolving, you know, it never stays, you know, it's not really made of souvenirs, you know.
Yeah. Were you always conscious of that about fashion? Because you're such a creative person. Then was it frustrating for you?
Not
to
really
be modeling and not feeling creative, or
no, not really, because you know I could be creative from, you know, when I was
in
off
ways,
modeling,
yeah,
in other ways, and I was already writing a little music and a few lyrics here and there, and I would travel with my guitar. It was a great companion because it's quite of a lonely job.
Yeah,
and but I wasn't frustrated. It was good fun, you know.
Okay.
It's just it was different from songwriting, which is such a lonely, lovely. You know, delicate moment,
right?
You know, and like a shelter.
Right.
You know, modeling, it was more like overexposure, but it was good fun, you know, for those years.
Yeah.
And I was happy to be modeling for so long. You know, we lasted very long compared to, you know, a modeling career, usually 3-4 years.
Yeah. When you say we, who are you thinking of?
Like
who
a
are
group
some of, your...
of people, you know, we were sort of a group of girls at the time.
Yeah.
Maybe 20, 25 girls,
okay.
always the same, seeing each other's all the fashion shows.
Right.
And sometimes a new one would walk in, you know, and become part of the group.
Uh-huh.
We got lucky because, you know, we became famous for nothing, really. Yeah, let's say the truth.
I mean, I love that humility that you have about it. Did you always have that?
Well, it's lucidity, you know, more than humility.
I like that. Yeah.
To me, you know, I'm not.
Yeah,
it was, we got very lucky. And there was a few designers and photographers talked about us and we became names.
Mm.
Instead of being only faces and bodies.
Right.
You know.
Is that when you lived in New York in those days?
Definitely. I lived in, we lived all over the place. You know, basically the four cities were New York, London, Milan, and Paris. And then modeling started spreading out and we went to other countries. But, you know, collections were made in those cities. So I would do, at the time, Milan was the first city. Now I think it's New York for the fashion week. So we would do over and over the fashion weeks. And the rest of the time we'll do editorial and advertisement catalogs, you know, and just modeling work.
Yeah.
And are you comfortable in that traveling lifestyle? Have you always enjoyed that as opposed to being set in one place?
I enjoyed it when I was really young. I enjoy it a bit less now that I have small children at home because I miss them, you know, and I feel like sorry to leave them. And so touring is great. You know, I'm starting this tour now, but it's always so ambivalent because it's the pleasure to be on stage every night and then the pain of being away from home. And I become more, I don't know, there's something more vulnerable with age, you know, like my heart used to be unvulnerable and now I am much more vulnerable.
Yeah.
I'm afraid of losing people. I'm afraid of, you know, missing some time with my children. And you know, you have less time, so you become more concentrated on the stuff that you need.
Right.
You know, that you need.
That makes sense. So you took a time out while you were being First Lady of France, right?
Well, I've wrote songs and actually released an album. People were shocked. But I did it.
I didn't. You know, oh, in between those
years. I'm not killing them, but I'm just releasing music. Yeah, right. I released my third album and it sold quite well and I did promotion all over the place.
Okay, okay.
And it was your own music?
Yeah. My own music. Yeah. And I had a lot of fun making the promotion, you know, because people were so confused.
How did that all work
out? And
how
you could be like, both?
And it was funny. It was sort of punk. You know, for me, you know, somehow, you know, it was very transgressive, you know.
But for a first lady to release
a
record.
Yeah, I mean, but, I was, I couldn't stop. And the album was almost ready. And then I got married. What was I going to do? Throw it away, you know?
Ah, okay. So you made the album.
I started recording the album and writing the album. Uh-huh. And then I booked the studio, you know, which you cannot go backward,
right,
you know, because you stop. The musicians are there, the producers and cost money, you know.
It's funny, you think if anything could stop something, it would be being marrying the president and becoming first lady. Say, okay, the studios can hold.
Yeah. You know, it's just the label said, you know, everything was booked. And he said, and then I met my man and married him.
Right.
And became a disaster. And everybody said, oh my God, what about your music? And I said, well, you know, I'm going to record the music and release it. And what's the problem, you know? It's not that I'm doing something bad,
it's not...
You know, every job is good,
you
know, unless you're a drug dealer maybe or, you know,
well,
or a prostitute. Then
this is what I want to know. What were his advisors telling him about marrying a musician? And what were your advisors telling you about marrying a politician?
I think everybody was against everything, you know. We didn't listen to advisors, I guess.
Yeah.
That's okay.
That's so funny.
It was good fun anyway. I mean, good fun. It was a great experience.
Right. Yeah.
Probably brought a lot to my music, you know.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Did you get to perform it at the time?
No, but I came to New York because there was a fantastic tribute for Nelson Mandela, who was still alive at the time. And it was his birthday. So they made a fantastic tribute at Radio City Hall. Big, with lots of artists.
Yeah.
And there was a choir from South Africa. Oh. And so I got to play Quelqu'un m'a dit with the choral. And I was playing with my friend Dave Stewart, so from Eurythmics. You know. And, you know, sweet dreams are made of this.
Yeah, right.
And because, you know, your generation never know. And so... So anyway, we played Blowing in the Wind with Dave Stewart with both our guitars. And there was a huge picture of Nelson Mandela behind us.
And the choir was singing with you?
And the choir was singing with us. A beautiful choir from South Africa, you know, from his country. And then I played Quelqu'un m'a dit on my own with my guitar and the choir. Wow. And it was one of them. So then there was the choir, so I did it very slow. So I saw myself, then I saw like a, you know, a replay from it.
Yeah.
And I was really slow, like in a slow motion. But the choir made it sound like a prayer or like a gospel song, you know, it was beautiful.
That's amazing.
And so I didn't really play live like in a regular tour.
Right.
But I had occasions, you know, to go and play.
Very special.
Very special occasions.
So very that was, high profile.
That was very nice. So nice.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. I had the pleasure and the honor of meeting Nelson Mandela and a few months before, so I was very happy to go and could bring this tribute.
Yeah. But otherwise,
to be part of it.
Yeah. Were you okay though with not touring in those years?
Yeah.
You were fine.
Yeah, you know, at my age, 5 years, they just.
Yeah, that's true.
Very,
that's
very fast. True. It's like 5 days.
Yeah.
So I wasn't touring for 5 days. Big deal.
You're still able to play the guitar at night.
Yeah, I play guitar all the time. Right. I wrote songs and in any case. And then it was a great experience. So it's probably brought something into my soul that I will use one day, you know, with my writing or songwriting or even writing something else, you know.
Right. So when did you actually start playing music?
I started playing music very young because both my parents are musicians.
Okay.
My father died now, but my father was a classic composer and my mother a pianist. So basically I played music all my childhood. Yeah, I played violin and piano.
Uh-huh.
And violin is very difficult. And piano, you need to work every day. If you don't work like every day. So anyway, someone gave me, I think an uncle of mine gave me a guitar when I was 10. And mm-hmm. then I completely fall in love because, you know, guitar was not institutional music learning. You know, you didn't right. have to write the notes, uh-huh. didn't have to read the notes. You could just play. And that's when I started playing all the songs that are in this, you know, new album.
American classics.
Yeah, mm-hmm. American classic. But yeah. I played many other songs, you know, but I wasn't going to make like, you know, 50 songs albums of covers, you know. Uh-huh. But there was probably like maybe 50 or 100 songs that I would just play the whole day. The
yeah.
Beatles.
Yeah.
And of course the Stones, but also some French music, uh-huh. you know, French songs from those years. And I would play, you know, for my friends, for my family, or just for myself to yeah. train, you know.
Okay.
So those songs are really coming before my own songs.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I don't know if my songs would be the same without playing these songs for so many years.
Yeah.
You know?
Totally.
Because they, you know, you write from what you read,
mm-hmm.
that you start from something,
mm-hmm.
and you play from what you sing, mm-hmm. you know. So I was playing other people, you know, so much time before I even thought of becoming a songwriter.
Yeah.
I was dreaming about becoming
were
a
you,
songwriter.
Were you, when I you would practice, dreaming. Would you think this is something I would love to do
Yeah,
myself?
But I thought I could never do it. You know, I thought I would never be able to do it. And then, you know, by the age of 18 or 20 years old, I got a little bored of, you know, singing other people's song, and I said, well, you know, it's a melody. So I was always writing little lyrics. So I said, let's try to put some lyrics with some notes and to see if it works, you know. And yeah. that's how I started writing my first songs, and Quelqu'un m'a dit came a few years after that.
Oh, nice. Did yeah. you ever take voice lessons?
Oh, yeah, I have to take voice lessons.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
It's very shy at you.
Oh, really?
And then I thought, I'd never become a singer. And I thought, I become a songwriter and then I can give my song to people, right?
Yeah.
To singers that, you know, great performers and singers.
Uh-huh.
And so I went with Quelqu'un m'a dit to see some French, you know, girls that mm-hmm. that don't write, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I made them listen to Quelqu'un m'a dit, and they said, and one of them told me, but this is very intimate. You should sing it. You have to sing it. And I said, oh, but I'm too shy. I don't have enough voice. And they say, and she said, no, you have to sing it. It's you. And you're going to bring it. You're going to carry it much. And she yeah. said, I like your songs. I love them.
Uh-huh.
And then it became a success. So she called me back. She said, I refuse this yeah. album. She said, I can't believe it. And how deaf must I be? And that wasn't it. So then when I had to learn, had to sing, then I started learning. And so now I can do, c'est quelqu'un qui m'a dit que, I mean, I'm not Adele, obviously, but.
I can
really carry my song now. And
definitely.
It became much easier because it's hard to learn how to write, how to get inspired.
Yeah.
How to write music, how to write lyrics. You can learn how to sing just uh-huh. like you learn how to exercise. You know, it's a technique.
Do you think
anyone can sing. Anyone can sing. Anyone. And they say, yeah, but some people don't have any ear.
Yeah.
But that's not true because when it's educated, I've seen a television documentary about in Romania,
uh-huh.
they took in orphanage
yeah.
with little children abandoned, etc., etc. Mm-hmm. They've been giving music lesson to very small children, and they all have ear.
Hmm.
So it means that's something that you can educate, you know, and yeah. everyone can reach music, you know. It's about memory and
yeah.
ear
right.
and sensitivity,
yeah.
you know.
So the performance element had to come. Like, you must have been able, already comfortable standing in front of an audience because you had done that for years.
That's for
and the writing was coming and the music, but playing and singing at the same time and being confident in your voice.
Yeah, that was, that took me a while. But, you know, by the age of 75, I think I'd be a good singer. No, I mean, I'd be a great singer.
Okay,
you know, like
you
my dreams, like my idols. You
like
know?
Who?
I don't know, like Billie Holiday.
Okay, there you go. That's pretty good.
Well, this
big names, eh?
Yeah. Dream big.
Yeah.
This new album, especially, I'm sure they're all examples of this, but it's like a living, breathing example of French romantic, like what we all consider romantic about the French language and the French accent. It's like the lilt in your voice and the way that you sing and the smokiness and the just everything about it is kind of a personification of what we dream about for the French.
It's pretty good for an Italian.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You fake it well.
You see, I'm born in Italy and I came to France when I was 7, but my mother's mother, my grandmother, was French.
Oh, was she?
And she raised me a lot. Okay. So I guess there's something about France that came into my ear and my heart from the beginning, you know, because she was there a lot. I remember when she died crying as if she was my mother, you know? So probably there's something affective that I have with France that is not only coming from me going to France at the age of 7, being raised in France, because we were at Italian schools.
Yeah.
So we were very much Italian, speaking Italian at home, reading in Italian, writing in Italian.
Right.
But there was something from my grandmother that never left my heart. You know, because she took care of me a lot when you're very little and you need a lot of caring. Mm-hmm. My mother was a loving mother, but very busy, you know. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, my grandmother raised me. And when I started writing, my hand wrote in French. And then I married, you know. So then I became all French. But the truth is that I'm perfectly half Italian and half French.
Yeah. Are you going to do an album in Italian?
I'd love to. I mean, Italian sings, you know, easy. You read the menu, pomodoro, melanzane, focaccia.
Yeah.
Hey, it's only food. And, you know,
that'd be a great album.
Incredible?
Carla Bruni reads
the menus.
Reads a restaurant read any menu.
Just put good music on.
Yeah, that's
and
it.
Then we very romantic.
All just pizza toppings.
No, but it's true. I mean, Italian is so vocal, so incredibly musical, you know,
even
you need a few words and it sounds musical. Mm-hmm. While English is the best language for songs because it has rhythm, you know, and it has, you know, it has, so it's very good for pop music or folk music or, you know, R&B and all the music you can make.
Uh-huh.
Maybe, don't know about classic music or opera, but. Mm. And French is very difficult for singing. Because it's a peu tout creux, gneu, gneu, fait tout. It doesn't have
it's
a very, and it doesn't
small
have
mouth.
Rhythm, and it doesn't have vocals, you know. Doesn't have voiles so much, you know. And but it is very good for writing, because it's a very literate language, you know. Like to say one, you know, to describe one thing, you have 20 words,
right?
Yeah,
and it's very rich.
Yeah,
and also it's very poetic to write. You know, it has something very, I don't know how to describe.
Oh, it's so lyrical.
It is lyrical.
Do you find it easier to sing in English than in French?
Definitely to sing, but not to write.
Right.
Well, I can't write in English, otherwise I would written real songs. You know, instead of making covers. You know, but David Foster said to me, he came to my concert in Los Angeles and he said, "Oh, I like your voice. I like your songs. Didn't understand a word." It really freaked me out because I was touring in America. You know, I came to New York and LA and then South America. And I thought the people were not going to understand a word. And my songs are sort of, you know, based on their lyrics, you know. And all my, you know, idols like Bob Dylan or Leonard Cohen or people like that, they talk their lyrics, people, you know, there's something that they say is not for fun, you know, it's something important they say in each song. So so I'd explain the song before I sang them. It was so embarrassing. I said, "This is a song about..." I'm surprised that people didn't fall asleep, you know, I mean, so now I have English songs, right?
Yeah.
Don't have to explain.
No, don't
this
explain
is a
these.
Song written by AC/DC.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
How badass that you have Highway to Hell on there.
Yeah, that's because of my son. He's playing always metal music and so loud.
Yeah.
And he said, "Mommy, your music is really nice, but it's like lullabies." And I said, no lullabies. It's like, you know, your music you sing at night to your children.
Yeah, lullabies.
Lullabies.
Children are so like, mean to their
lullabies.
Parents.
Lullabies. And I said, okay, you see what you see.
Yeah. Like, challenge accepted.
Right. And then he listened to it and he said, still like a lullaby. It's very jazzy. You think I'm somebody very old. And I told him, you know, AC/DC, they're really old too. They're just like Mama.
So funny. How did you choose Miss You of all Stone songs?
We had Miss You, and then we had another song called I Got the Silver that I was playing on stage already for a few years. And then maybe two or three other songs. We chose Miss You because we managed to change it.
Yeah.
And we made it some, you know, we tried to make it like a girl.
Yeah.
And it was a very mannish, you know, the Stones, the very, you know, the... a band, they're very rock and roll, they have this incredible sound, and everything is very mannish, right?
Yeah.
And so we tried, with my guitar player and David Foster, we tried to find a feminine way to make the song as if it was, you know, a girl song, and then we made it more Latin, you know?
Because it has a swing
It has a swing, and it's sort of a, and I mean, you can dance the tango on it.
Or right.
Actually, the real rhythm, you know, my guitar player, if he was here, Tao, he would say it, it's called a rumba flamenca. Yes, indeed.
Nice. Did you tell Mick that you're going to do it?
No, I just sent it them, the whole band. Okay. And Mick, of course, the song and the video.
Yeah.
That was a beautiful video made by...
Amazing.
Oh, yeah,
beautiful,
it's nice,
video.
The video by Jean-Baptiste Mondino, who is a great great film maker and video maker for a long time. Mm-hmm. And he did videos with Prince, with Madonna, and then he stopped doing videos for like 10 years. So I managed, you know, we managed to convince him to do the video, so I was very happy. So I just sent the video... And then they posted something. They posted that they liked the
Rolling
song.
Stone,
And I was like, yes. Yeah. Because, you know, I didn't call them. You know? First of all, I don't really talk to them so much, you know. And then they're sort of busy.
Yeah.
So, but I was happy that they posted something.
No, that's awesome. And you got Willie Nelson in the studio with
you? Yeah. No, I wish.
Oh, recorded separately? Okay.
We did it through, now people can do that.
True.
But my dream
is
to get him on stage.
Like, no. Two aesthetically opposite people, you and Willie Nelson.
I was so crazy to have him on stage.
You're going to get him on stage?
I hope so. I pray for him to come on. Just to meet him would be enough for me.
Yeah, exactly.
And thank him in life. Yeah. You know? Be able to thank him. And but I think he's touring all the time. I mean, he's...
he's an active guy.
Yeah, he's definitely...
Sure, it's possible.
Yeah.
I'm going to try to find him and go and meet him and thank him and shake his hand. That would be a good legendary moment for me.
Totally.
Fantastic. What a songwriter, really. And what a singer and what a guitar player. Mm-hmm. And no one plays like him. Like his sound, the way he plays, you know.
Yeah.
It's just so unique. But in America, it has a lot of success. No, Willie Nelson. People know him for like a legend.
Oh, yes. Absolutely,
definitely,
For sure.
Are you still a student of guitar when you you see people and are inspired and learning?
Very
and
much, but there's some evolution that got stopped with guitar for some reason. I don't know. David Foster said to me, are you going to play on the ABBA song you play here? And I said, no. We have this fantastic guitar player, my guitar player, and his guitar player was fantastic too. So I said, no. And he said, yes, you're going to do it because no one is going to play it in such a bad way. No one can play it as bad as you can. And we want... And he said, and I want your clumsiness. Do you say clumsiness?
Yeah.
Do you?
That's so
you
funny.
Know, there's something clumsy.
Endearing.
What the thing is that, you know, I write my music with my guitar, so I can obviously play guitar. But I could never do a solo, you know, or something like that.
Yeah.
And I thought, when I realized that, instead of working on my guitar playing, I thought it was useless, you know? Because some people, they play incredible, but then they never write a song, you know? So it must be coming from somewhere else in your soul, you know? So I thought, I get a very good guitar player and I show him stuff. Can you do this? And then he always can do it and do it so much better, you know, than me. So I can concentrate on writing something decent or something deep or something sentimental, you know, whatever the music is. And I don't concentrate on studying guitar because, you know, at my age, I'm not going to become Frank Zappa now. I mean, or, you know.
Just Billie Holiday, but not Frank
Zappa. Yeah, not
but
later
you do.
Billie Holiday. Yeah, I mean, you know.
But you do play on the record a little bit?
Yeah, I play on the ABBA song, The Winner Takes It All.
Awesome. Oh, yeah.
You recognize my touch if you listen to it. The beginning is me. And I said, are you sure about this, David? This is so embarrassing. He's
going
to bring the song down. And he said, no, we do it this way. And then I'm so relieved when the other instrument come in. And because I'm alone for a while.
It's very
until
vulnerable.
The cello once in. I'm alone for like... Yeah, I would say like 20, 30 seconds.
Yeah.
And I do the same on stage, you know. I start the song, you know, alone. And then I say to the guys, hey,
help me. Let's go. Hey.
Yeah. I need some help here.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So when they arrive, I feel like there's a very comfortable, you know, chair that is coming behind me, you know, and I can support.
Yeah, exhale a little bit. Yeah. I want to say that I love that you do Stand By Your Man.
Thanks.
And I know that people... try to take issue with that song. But I think there's something so delicious about you especially singing it because like you're a badass woman in your own right, and you know, I'm sure you're a great partner to the people that you're with, but like you're not just standing by anybody, you know.
So
I think it's like it's almost like meta or ironic, or like there's like something so cool about hearing
it.
You sing that song. Yeah.
Well, the thing is that, you know, the funny part is that Tammy Wynette, she didn't have the life of the song at all.
She
got
through
married, many partners.
Yeah.
And so she was probably dreaming about Standing By Her Man.
Yeah, right.
But
so,
never
like,
found,
stability
you
would
ask.
Be nice.
Someone probably wrote it, gave
are
it
you the
her,
man
so
I'm going to stand by?
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Maybe, you know, she was coming from the 50s, and that was, you know, women were different then. You know, feminism was not as strong.
Yeah.
Women were not as independent. Mm-hmm. And they were not all working. Many women were still... be housewife and at home, you know, and even that was like that. But now feminism is breaking through and women knows about their rights and they know about the freedom and they, you know, they know about their body.
Right.
They decide when they have children or not.
Right.
And they can choose to be mothers or not, you know, and you can have
hopefully
all sort of different life.
Yeah.
You know?
How do you feel about feminism these days?
I feel
like I've read kind of conflicting
feelings
you've had.
No, I mean, I feel quite feminist, but I was born after a very strong feminist movement.
Yeah.
So I actually could... I could afford not to be feminist and to be feminine, you know, because these women break the doors for us.
Right.
You know what I feel now is that the new generation has to start again.
Yeah.
And so that we always have to be sort of aware of this thing that machism is and is always ready to recover and come up, you know. And
that's,
I don't know why is that. Maybe because... men are coming from us and we're not coming from men, so they might be scared forever. Scared.
Sure, yeah.
Well,
when
terrified.
There's progress, there's always going to be a pushback against it. But
yeah.
I would argue that you've been feminist your whole life because you've lived your life for yourself.
Yeah, I mean,
independence,
you know, is very important.
So whatever you call it.
To be work.
Yeah.
Work, you know, and make your own life. That's independence, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
That's being feminist, is not asking... you know, money to anyone and have your own job. That's already
there.
You know, every woman that does this is a feminist.
Exactly. So is your husband home with the kids now?
Not really.
That's my fantasy of your life right now.
See, yeah, no, not really. My husband, okay. Of course, he has so much energy that when he stops politics, he works the same.
Right, of course.
I'm like, I can't believe you're working the same.
Yeah.
He said, yeah, no, I take weekends off. And I'm like,
not
I can't
really.
Believe you're working as much. But now he's working in private work. He's a lawyer. He has a lot of work all over the world. So he's traveling a lot. And, you know, one other thing I want to say is that my man, who is very strong, sort of alpha type of man, you know, very classy.
You have to have that personality to get into politics.
Yeah,
think.
Probably.
Men or women.
But you know what? The thing is, he's the most caring man in the world. So he stands by me.
Right. There you go.
There you go.
And he should do a cover of your cover.
Yeah, but he's not like to sing, you know.
Okay.
He said, no, singing will be not for this life.
No.
Just like modeling, he said, modeling will be not for this life. Next life, probably.
I'll stand by you.
But no, what that's happened so is that that's the reason why I stand by him. I mean, you know, is that, of course, he didn't look like that, because when you're married to someone who's a president, everybody thinks you're obeying to something, you know. But that's not in our couple, it was never like that.
Right. I mean, it's quite a literal.
He leaves me so much room, you know. He never stopped me from doing anything. No matter what people would advise to him when he was a president, he would never listen.
Well, he probably knew it wouldn't last long if you tried to.
No, not only. He has respect for women. He's one of these men that is just crazy about women, mm-hmm. you know? And he has respect for women, and he thinks women has to be treated better than a man. Mm-hmm. So he's the opposite of a macho, you know,
right,
basically.
Right, right.
He has a maybe fascination for a woman. Yeah. He was raised by his mother alone, you know,
uh-huh.
and his father never really took care of him. So I think he doesn't have... He can fight men, but he would never fight a woman.
Mm-hmm.
That was a problem when he was into politics.
Yeah.
He would never fight a woman.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Speaking of machos, everyone asks you what you think about Melania, and I don't care at all what you think about Melania, but I would like to know this thing that Trump said that you two have dated.
Yeah, isn't that weird?
Yeah.
But he did that with many people at the time.
Yes.
And actually, I think he did it himself because I read something from a journalist that uh-huh. made an enquete that it was a habit.
Yeah,
of him to make him. These lies.
Just
boasting that he dated people that he
the press and pretend to be somebody else. But the thing is that people, I think, recognize him.
Oh
so this is not coming from neither from me, neither from nothing existing.
Oh,
it's
like
coming
he might have called.
Yeah, I think
a
he did it with Kim Basinger as well, mm. and Madonna. She must have. Urticaire, because yeah. she doesn't like him. She must have had. So I think it was a habit, probably to keep the attention, to attract the attention away from business and put it on something else, you know. But I don't really know about all that, and I don't really care because it was not a major thing in my life. It was not, you know, I met
totally.
Him once, and then it became public. That was very strange.
Right.
And I met him in a flight. So. Yeah. So anyway, and he was with someone at the time, so I find it very unpleasant, you know?
Because
I'm
want
a
that
very,
to be true,
you know, I'm the type of woman that likes women,
uh-huh.
you know?
Yeah.
I mean, not sentimentally or sexually,
but
I mean, I need women, I like women,
uh-huh.
I don't cheat on women, you know?
Right,
And would never betray someone, you know, that I know, being a woman. I like women's relationship. Very much.
Yeah.
So I found it very unpleasant because it was with another woman.
Yes,
you know,
right.
No.
Well,
not
also
a moral
because
thing.
You're Carla Bruni and he should be so lucky.
Yeah.
I just want to say that for
I
the
was
round.
Very
like,
young. I was
on.
Not so famous at the time. I just started modeling you know, and come to New York and it was so funny to live in New York at the time.
Yeah.
Coming from Europe, it was like, wow, you know. Some French writer, Louis Ferdinand Céline, wrote about New York, the buildings are standing up. And it's true, you know, when you come from Europe, you feel like everything is laying down.
Everything's much
especially
lower,
Rome, you know.
Right,
especially Rome, she looks like an older woman laying
it's
down
so
and aging slowly, you know.
And talk about
no
a dusty city, that's Rome,
But Paris is the same, and New York is like a, you know, it's like a standing city, sort of a jumping city.
Yeah.
So
where did you live in the city?
I lived downtown. I lived in Tribeca before anyone lived in Tribeca.
Yeah.
It was West Broadway and Chambers,
nice.
And then I lived 18 in Broadway, and then I lived in the Carnegie Hall because at the time a very good friend of mine, Mike Reinhardt, and his wife had an apartment in the Carnegie Hall.
Oh,
at
wow.
the time, it was still possible. So you would go up from the back elevator, and it was little dancers on the corridor, people playing trumpet. You know, it was living
That's
in
a New
the
York
opera.
Dream.
It was fantastic.
Yeah.
I think those apartments don't exist anymore. I think I don't know, maybe
don't know.
Mike still has his apartment. But I don't know why. Anyway, I sort of he left me a room in his apartment, and then he was always, you know, traveling. So me and my best friend Marine, both modeling, we were staying in the Carnegie Hall. It was like a dream.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah,
very
and
cool.
then Tribeca, who was fantastic, and Robert De Niro has just begun something called the Tribeca Center.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was a lot of library films, you know. But the area was still a business area.
Yeah,
and at night it was still empty. And now it's completely different.
Yeah, now the financial district, everyone's moving there. It's crazy.
Yeah.
So when do you go on tour?
So I go on tour. I start the tour at the end of October with Greece. I do a European tour, October and January.
Uh-huh.
Then I'll be in America in February. I'll be here on the 16th of February, right after Valentine's Day.
Nice.
So I invite you to the concert if you want.
Thank you.
It's only romantic songs, yes.
Yeah, for sure.
So I'll be here on the 16th of February. Then I go to many other cities in America and then... we go to South America later for Easter, and we go to Asia, and we might go to Australia. My God, I'll bring the children then.
Just for that one?
No, but I mean, I never been to Australia. Have you ever been?
No.
It's so far, right?
Yeah, right.
You might go only once, right?
Yeah. So you never had to go for modeling?
No, I never had to go for
or
modeling.
A state visit?
State visit and no modeling by mistake. I'd love to see New Zealand as well.
Yeah.
So maybe a little jump
from
Australia to New Zealand. Yeah. Because, you know, it's so many hours of flight from anywhere in the world that once you're there, maybe it's good
spend
to
some
visit.
Time. Yeah.
You know, it's a continent.
Right.
Right.
There's a lot
like
to
Africa.
See. Yeah. Okay, well, the album's called French Touch, and it's out, and it's so gorgeous.
So beautiful.
And you are the loveliest, and thank you for
coming
on the show. Carla Bruni, I want to clap you out. We began with a clap, and let's end on a clap.
I clap you girls.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Oh, baby, why you wait so long? Central Park, singing after dark. People think.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
So, you've got an idea for a business. The store of your dreams. There's just one thing to figure out. Everything. That's why Shopify's all-in-one commerce platform makes it easy to sell online, in person, and everywhere else. Sell on social media, source products with an app to get that first sale feeling. It's the only solution that gives you everything you need to sell everywhere you want. So when you're ready to bring your idea to life, power it up with Shopify.
Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/listen.